Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Here we go, on time as ever with the Mac Show. I'm Ewan Rankin, and I'm here to discuss the week in Macintosh news and Apple news and all the things that are going on there with a great panel. Really good bunch this week. Not the usual dross that we have. Starting top left, we've got Mr. Don McAllister. How you doing, mate?
Good afternoon. I don't know how to take that. I'll take it in the spirit it was intended. No, nice to see you. Nice to see you.
Good, mate. Thank you. How's life in Liverpool? Is it calmed down now?
Compared to what? No, it's fine.
Well, I know the Olympics are gone and all that kind of stuff, you know. Well,
we didn't see much of that around here, to be honest, but yeah, I must admit, I was an Olympic skeptic, but they won me round after the opening ceremony, and dip out again a couple of times.
We've got a few of your tweets to discuss this week.
Oh, really? Oh,
it's the first time I've ever seen you not a happy man on Twitter.
Oh, dear.
Normally, you don't slag anything off, but...
Oh. Best look back at my Twitter stream, then, see what I've been saying.
Next to him. There he goes. Can't ring when you're talking. It's got to be on someone else's screen. Next to him, Andy Anatko, join us from Boston. How you doing, mate? Good monthly visit?
Yes, as always. Have my usual monthly checkup here.
Now then, you're talking about coming over and seeing us, aren't you?
I have a number of frequent flyer miles that I wish to spend on a sojourn to London.
Excellent.
And so it depends on whether American Airlines will actually allow me to use them because, you know, Mayor Miles are more like, you want to come back after you leave. We can sell you a departure ticket for December, but you would have to leave at November 3rd.
Oh,
November 3rd, is that good?
Yeah.
So we're looking for a slot I want to experience once again that wonderful London winter. And so that's probably around November.
Well, December. Yeah, okay. October, November's good. You'll get nice. There'll still be a few leaves on the tree if a bit brown.
When are they pulling down the Olympic rings from Tower Bridge?
That's probably a week after next, I would have thought. But
So it's only good for people who are athletes. So as soon as the Paralympics are gone, screw yourself, Andy Anatko. You're not an enough athlete. You don't deserve to look at the Olympic rings.
That's it. If you want to gaze upon the rings of Britain. No jokes about rings. Thank you very much. Next to him, we've got Forsman. How you doing, mate?
Hello.
Here to discuss the week in Apple. Anything that you're especially excited about this week with Apple? No.
Excited? No. Nothing exciting.
You haven't sharpened your pencil over anything.
No, I haven't.
Leave lead in pencils out of it. And yes. Finally. Mr. Green, how are you doing, sir?
Well, for a man of my age, okay, I suppose.
An alcoholic level.
Do.
And the Cylon-ness has gone for the moment, so that's good. We're late starting because Will's voice box seemed to have gone Metal Mickey on us. And last but by no means least, Dr. Happy Mac, how are you doing, man?
Ta-da! I'm good. Yes, I'm celebrating another year on the planet today.
Congratulations, mate. Happy birthday from all of us.
Thank you. I'm not entirely sure how old I am, but I am older. I am old.
Yes. That's a good thing about age. You forget how old you are.
I know. Somewhere in the 47.
I'm sure your daughters can remind you, however. They'll keep count. Your children keep count just to piss you off. And then when you say you are and it's a different age, they go, no, you're not. Anyway. The week in Apple. It's a week, actually, where there's some news, which is quite interesting. Because there's actually been nothing launched. John Browett is the one that's taken the flak, and this is where Don comes in, because Don, you were close to having a little voodoo doll there with John Browett in it.
Well, yeah, I thought it was really strange. I thought it was a strange appointment to begin with, to be honest.
It just goes to prove you can take the tosser out of PC World, but you can't take the PC World out of the tosser, can you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we should explain the backstory. This is the executive from PC World or Dixon's or wherever it was who has taken over from the guy who used to run the retail operation for Apple. And at the time, you know, everyone here in the UK was sort of scratching their head saying, what? Really? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tim Cook actually made a statement, I think, to say that he'd been selected and been well recommended and everything. We all thought, well, I personally thought, well, give the guy a bit of slack. You know, he might have been a It might have been, oh dear.
An arse.
No, I thought he might have had some good points, you know. Just because he worked at PC World and Dixon's doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, he's going to follow through. And then we had this, we had some rumors a couple of weeks ago that things weren't quite right with retail and they were laying off staff and cutting back. And it transpires that it was a strategy to change retail to make it leaner and more profitable. And then everyone was up in arms, and then suddenly they had a retraction a couple of days ago to say that actually, no, we realize it was a mistake and we're going to put everything back as it was. Sorry about that.
Look, there's a kind of bit.
Profitability has always been a problem at Apple retail, hasn't it?
There's two things about this that get me. Now, I remember when Apple announced that John Bratt was going to be CEO, and
we warned you.
We had readers, we had people tweeting, we had all kind. I mean, here's some of the things people told me about.
Let's be sure that they aren't libelous, but go ahead.
These are customers told me their opinions about PC World and Curry's.
Good lad, you can say what you like.
It's another one of their stores, right?
Yeah.
Here's one I can't say. here's one. The epitome of appalling service.
He's PC World, yes.
Yeah. It's never been a good retail experience.
No.
What else? Let's see. The sales staff are very pushy. They try to sell you other rubbish like extended warranties, cases, and even cloud storage. Even after you refuse, they just pass you onto the till and move on to the next customer. Someone said it was the absolute antithesis of the Apple Store.
Yep, that'd be pretty much it.
If you want a dingy shop full of distracting, always-on demonstration units staffed by surly ignoramuses who only want to sell you extended warranty, then Dixon's was the place to go.
So what I feel fair in saying here is we warned you guys, and I think, Andy, you were probably on the show when he was appointed.
Yeah.
And we were perplexed in this country, and uh-huh. there was a lot of people saying it looked like a good move in the States, but I'm sorry, it never was.
And here's the thing that kills me all about this whole reducing the staff. If you have ever gone into an Apple store in the United States, okay, even in some of like the lesser populated areas, they are always packed. They're always packed full of people, and you can barely get someone to help you because they're so busy.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I just want to buy something, and here's exactly what I want. I'm going to tell you, bring it to me, take my money, and I'll leave, and I'll be out of your hair. And like, you still have to argue with them to do that because they're already like have a line out the door of people they're trying to help.
Yeah, I mean, the chat rooms.
And so I can't even imagine trying to cut the staff at Apple stores. That's like the most retarded thing I've ever heard.
I mean, even in the chat room saying, oh, yeah, they don't try and sell you extended warranties, do they, like Apple? Oh, hang on, Apple Care, I forgot about that. But I've got to say, I know Apple Care is an extended warranty, but they tend to stand by it, which is different from a lot of other extended warranties where they try and get out of it on a constant basis. And Andy, any thoughts from another American, you know, looking at this from the outside a little bit, perhaps?
Yeah, that's the scariest thing in the world when you see in a press release or just like in a news report that, you know, they're trying to make the stores run a little bit leaner. That, yeah, this is a company that has almost $100 billion in cash. They don't need to.
Struggling.
This is the company that can afford to actually have adequate levels of staffing rather than figuring it. It's always like a stress to failure, like stressing an aircraft frame when they're trying to figure out how to provide customer service. It's always, let's continue to increase the stress until we see an actual break, until the thing actual snaps in two. And then, you know, what was the last number there? Okay, click that back one click, and that's the ideal number. We want exactly the worst amount of service we can provide until it actually drives people out of the store. So when you see that, yeah, we're trying to create a leaner staff. No, you don't want a leaner staff. I haven't had the same sort of problems at Apple stores as the other Andy has. As a matter of fact, it really points to how important it is that they organize themselves incredibly well. The last two times I've been to an Apple store, somebody like meets you at the door and says, what are you here for? And then sends you to the right person. When you go to the Genius Bar, somebody greets you before you get into the Genius Bar and taps into their magic iPod Touch thingy to say, you know, Gern Blanston is here to drop off his Mac Pro. And they tried, they realized that the way to keep everything moving is to actually give you exemplary customer service, because the last thing they want is people waiting around stacked up 4, 5, 6 bodies deep. So, yeah, I mean, it's, and it's only going to, and the idea of cutting staff before the holidays, that's when you start to, let's look at this guy's resume and see, could he possibly be a Google mole? Because that's a really good way to screw up the entire company.
Yeah. Jim Dalrymple made a good comment on the blog a couple of days ago. Said it really smacks of someone trying to make his mark. He's new to the job, and he's used to running a lean, mean. You know, you can hardly find anyone in some of these big supermarket type warehouse places. So he did the only thing he could do, which was to try and cut back and cut staff, etc. But the stores aren't really there for profitability, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they're not really a. Yes, they do sell, and they sell a ton of stuff. But the main thing I see the Apple Store for is for service. It's a place on the high street people can go to both see the gear and also to get support for it. Not so much to you never get the impression when you go in that it is a sales driven operation. It's very much a service driven operation.
Well, again,
and I think the guy's just been completely misguided in what he should be doing and made a huge mistake.
Couple of points.
If you run an organization like Dixon's or PC World, then your sales staff on the floor are a cost to the organization. And that's a cost that you want to be cutting to the absolute minimum. When you run your retail like Apple runs their retail, each member of staff is a profit generator. So you actually want more staff. If you cut your staff, you will actually cut profits.
Yeah, remember that Apple's model is really all about locking people into that logo. And sometimes they do it by making sure that you can't get software that hasn't been approved by Apple that will run on your device. But a lot of it is making sure that the standard default place to buy Apple hardware is this shiny Apple logo store inside the mall. And if you have a distinct and pleasant experience there, that will feed into your experience to make sure that your next laptop is also going to be a Mac, or the next computer you buy after you buy your first Apple product, after you buy your iPad, maybe you'll start thinking about a MacBook instead of buying a PC instead. And so it really is a huge profit generator. It is the most profitable business retail establishment per square foot in at least in the United States retail industry. So it is definitely a profit generator, but a lot of it is not going to be about how can we get by with the barest minimum of expenses. It really is about, here is the role that the store has to produce, and it's a lot more than simply figuring out a way to tack on a $50 service plan on a $20 HDMI cable.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing that I find here is that of all of the people that we've got on the panel today, we've got an Apple retail employee, X, and he's been the quietest of the bunch so far. And I've got the green counter going because I am expecting a string of expletives at this point. But Greeny, what's your view on all of this stuff?
Well, I did have a few emails about it from various people. It's a couple of things I think it's worth pointing out. One we haven't mentioned is they did get a 25% pay increase.
Under Browett.
Yeah, this is probably about a month ago. I think that's one thing to bear in mind. So I suppose before I move on, and the other thing is the only people they're getting rid of is people who have recently been employed under the 3-month thing.
Right.
So maybe what his plan was that he felt that they had enough staff to make those staff happier, because let's be honest, retail is the worst hours and the worst pay of anything really.
Mm.
So maybe he was trying to make his staff happier in one sense, and maybe he was trying to cut away some of the slack in another sense. The other thing that we haven't discussed is they put a stop on all promotions as well. That was the other thing, or the part of his, which I think is a bad thing, because I mean, if you join any company, you want to feel that you can, promote yourself and get on, or otherwise you'll go elsewhere and look for another company who will promote you and pay you more money and give you more responsibility. Well, I say the money thing. Money is one thing, but sort of anybody who joins Apple joins them because they love Apple. And you honestly wouldn't be employed by Apple if you didn't love them. So I thought the promotions things was a bad thing. I think the 25% pay increases is a good thing. And I can sort of see why there is a lot of staff in Apple retail stores And I worked for Apple Retail for, I don't know, what, two or three years. And quite often in the slack periods of the day, you'd have like a dozen staff just milling around doing nothing. So I don't know. I think you've got to balance it out, really.
I mean, you and I both know a few Apple employees who are still Apple employees, so don't mention any names. But I mean, in terms of the first 6 months under Barrett, what's have you heard any direct feedback from any of them about good, bad, indifferent, whether the experience has changed as working for Apple or not?
No, nothing's changed, really. Nothing's changed under him. But you wouldn't expect it to, really, within the first 6 months. I mean, as you know, in any sort of corporate, any sort of plans you put in place take forever to implement, unless you're Steve Jobs and you get it done like next day. But everything else, you have to go through this whole sort of managed process. And so I wouldn't expect to see any changes up until this point, really.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think what he did, I think, was a bad PR move, but I can sort of see it from a business sense. So I'm not defending him, but I'm trying to give you the other side of the argument.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, well, go ahead.
The other interesting thing is that Browett did they laid off a bunch of people who had been recent hires, and they have like I think it's a 90-day probation period, and this is the case in a lot of places. Businesses have this like kind of probation period where they hire you on, they see it, you know, if you're not working out, they let you go, and it's not a big deal. But they got rid of a lot of that staff, but they were also cutting hours for part timers. They were cutting them quite a bit, and they were also even cutting some hours of some of the regular full-time people. And what happens is when you work full-time, even though you're working a lot of hours and the pay isn't that great, but when you're working those hours, it's like, you know what to expect on your paycheck. When they cut your hours, okay, you still have like most of the same obligations, and you can't just suddenly pick up a new job to fill in the space and that suddenly you're getting less money.
Yeah.
To be fair, that's you know? Made pretty clear when you join. I was full-time. I was a creative. We were pretty limited as far as people were concerned. But the specialists, there was a fair few, and a lot of the part-timers liked it that way. And Apple were pretty flexible in switching the hours between the various Apple specialists on the shop floor and bringing in extra people when they needed to. They were very open and very flexible. Now, it's been a few years since I worked for Apple, so maybe things have changed. But
what I'm hearing from people at Apple Retail is that this new plan that Browett had implemented was not like that, and a lot of the cuts were coming they weren't requested. They were kind of forced on some of the people, and then at the same time, the managers working under Browett were like, this is a bad idea. Don't do this. This is dumb. And he did it anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it doesn't bode well for the future, does it?
Yeah.
Give the bloke a fair, I mean, he's only been in there 6 months. Give him a chance.
Well, I mean, there's a certain point.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong.
Chat room's making a lot of comments here. I mean, Max Fellow saying Apple Store employees are not pushy. They don't get commission. If you want to speak to them, that's fine. Other people are saying, yeah, but if you go to PC World, they'll sell you some crap. Whereas Apple, if they don't know, they'll go and find a member of staff who does. So that's the focused experience again for it. And a lot of them are supporting the Apple process and the Apple way and everything that we're saying on it. They're not going against that at all. But one of the points that Alex has made is kind of the cost-cutting idea is due to a captive audience. If you treat them like crap, save money and keep the result, then keep the audience, then that's a result. And there is a certain element of the fact that he's been asked to run the retail business and make it profitable, I'm sure, as part of his remit. And in the UK frame of mind, what he's done is what probably a lot of UK retail managers would have done, because UK retail stores are cut to the quick in general.
Mm.
There's a cultural issue within that as well, perhaps.
Yeah,
but it's also an indication that when you are a new hire to that job, I mean, to build on Jim Dalrymple's point, it's a little bit like saying, My goal is to increase profits. That's how I'll be judged to success. Mm. I know. Here's all this really expensive real estate that we have and some of the best malls in the world. We'll sell them all. We'll move stores to like smaller places. It's like it's a good short term thing to do because because to your eye, you think that you can run the business just as well without such expensive things like good long-standing employees, like good retail locations, like things like expensive cleaning crews and maintenance crews, people whose job it is to make sure that all the display units are actually working and functioning, things like that. That's not necessarily required selling computers. But then if you had been there for 4 or 5 years, you get to see the entire business as one interlocking entirety. And you realize that no, part of the whole experience is that the floors have to be really, really clean. The staffing has to be absolutely spot on. People can't go there and see a dark screen. They have to see something there that actually engages them. So mm-hmm. it's easy to make if you're trying to, trim part of your budget, it's easy to cut your cable TV, cut your electrical bill by unplugging absolutely everything, do all these really, really quick fix things that don't really go to the central problem of if there's a deficiency with how the business is run, here is the core thing that's going wrong. So it's very, very easy for a new hire to go to these surface things that don't really make a difference positively and ignore anything that's actually fundamentally wrong with the business. Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Well, just before we sort of move away from it, I think there's two. Well, there's three points really. Two bad ones and one good one. The two bad ones were one, and yeah, I appreciate what Will is saying, but it felt at the time that it was a bad decision to actually take the guy on. So that was like one thing. Mm-hmm. The second is that he's been able to implement those policies, and although people did say don't do it, they actually didn't listen to him, and he actually did it. So that's another bad thing. Yeah. The good thing is that they've accepted they've made a mistake and they reversed the decisions. But I think those first two points were quite unsettling at the time, them actually taking mm-hmm. him on. And, obviously they need to give him free rein to begin with, but they've had to, reverse those decisions. So quite worrying, really. But I'm glad to see they've acknowledged they've made a mistake and they've reversed it. So
could we see John Browett back on the UK shores in no time at all?
You never know. You never know.
I reckon so.
Let's hope not.
It's going to happen, isn't it? I mean, nobody likes the bloke, really. Let's be honest.
We love you, John. Come back anytime. Just leave me a notice so I can find out which plane you're on.
He's a John rocket, Scully of the retail world.
Get a
rocket
propelled grenade. That was a joke, by the way, for any of the enforcement services that are listening. Now, John's second tweet of the week.
Oh, no.
Was that if this 7-inch iPad thing is real. He likes the look of them.
Yeah.
Talk us through this one then, mate. Because these are all bull, right?
Well, it's another rumour, isn't it? Mind you, there was a nice blog post someone did about the new connector, which was quite interesting. I'd have to dig the link out for that. The latest round of rumours say that the 7-inch iPad is a dead cert, but that it's not perhaps what we thought it would be. It's not going to be just like a mini iPad. It's actually going to be, they'll still use the 4:3 aspect ratio, but potentially they could actually slim down the sides. You don't really need the bezel down the sides, so it could look like slightly more elongated, although they keep the same form factor. And it has some credence, and it looks quite nice. So it's literally just a tiny bit bigger than the Nexus 7, but the screen size is huge compared to the Nexus 7. And I think it's a goer. I think it's a goer. I still don't know when. I'm not sure if they'll get it in time for the holiday season. For this Christmas, but I think it's got legs because Apple haven't killed it. They haven't killed the rumors. They're letting the rumors go on and on and on. No, that indicates to me that there's no smoke in that.
Andy, any thoughts?
I think that you do need some margin around the bezel. I think that if you want to copy somebody, you really got to look at the e-ink Kindles as to how people are responding to these tiny, tiny tablets. The Nexus 7 is a good example, but the Kindle, like e-ink version of Kindle, is a great indicator of how to do things. I have the problem is that even though the argument to the idea that you're not going to see much margin around the screen on this on the sides of this thing is that, well, with the iPad you hold it like this, with a 7-inch tablet you can hold it like that. Yeah, but you're also like any book, you're always shifting it in your lap, you're always shifting it in your hands, and the biggest fail for any device like this would be if you do finger taps and do page turns without intending to do so. One of the many reasons why the Kindle Fire got dinged was because they put the power button on the bottom. It's like a protruding button at the bottom center of the screen. And if you're actually holding it with one hand, your pinky is actually sort of bumping against it. Right. So it's so easy to turn it on and turn it off. And the ergonomic design of the 7-inch is going to be very, very important. I also think that at this point, there's nothing destructive. If Apple is seriously intending to produce a smaller iPad for the holiday season, at this point, there's no downside to making sure that these rumors continue to be in play, no matter what form that they take. The only time that they would actually jump in and put their hand in is if they found out that it was being accepted as absolute canon. That, oh well, here's the exclusive, and we've absolutely confirmed this. The new iPad is going to be 3 inches wide and 11 inches long. And it's going to be just one scrolling column of newspaper text, no pictures, no sound, and it actually connects to your network via Ethernet, no Wi-Fi whatsoever. And if this got so much attention that people are saying, oh well, I was going to hold off, I was going to buy the Nexus 7, but then I thought I'd hold off until the fall just to see what Apple's doing. But now, geez, I'm going to buy that Nexus 7 right now. That's when you would see a suspiciously well-sourced story in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times talking about how somebody who happened to have access to something says that that's not true, that Apple's definitely moving forward with a 7.85-inch screen. That's the only time that Apple would actually get involved in these rumors, when there's a serious upside to them getting involved in the scrum.
I mean, it's quite an interesting time at the moment with the tablets, because we've had the Note came out in 10-inch form factor this week. We've had a filing for the Kindle Fire in 10-inch, allegedly, with the FCC. Asus, was it, that did the 13-inch, or Acer? I've got a 13-inch tablet that's just gone through FCC. So the form factors, the other thing that they said was that the 5-inch Note has sold 10 million units on its own, which I think is a good sales figure for that kind of form factor. There's a lot of, you know, what is the size? Is there a market that Apple has to dip into now at 7 inches? It can't ignore it anymore, or is it still a nice to have?
It's the fact there's so many people buying the Nexus 7, the fact there's so many people buying the Kindle Fire, despite its deficiencies, and despite the fact that when you do see people with a handheld tablet, it is these inexpensive e-ink devices. Apple would be silly if they're going to ignore the fact that this is a vote of confidence from the consumers, from their consumer dollars, on what kind of devices they want. The thing that I've been saying over and over again, because to me it's a fascinating question, is that the problem with having the iPad as such a brand new device, there have been tablets before, but let's not kid ourselves, there's never been something like the iPad before, is that the fact that it's a huge, huge phenomenal success doesn't necessarily mean that Apple has absolutely cracked the code and developed the perfect device. We don't know yet what it is that consumers are responding to. Is it the fact that you have the super slim tablet device? Is it the fact that there's this great library of software for it? Is it the fact that it's as flexible as a notebook in many ways? Or once you start getting Asus and Samsung, these companies who specialize in saying, well, let's play with different form factors. We don't have to be locked into one design. We can, Samsung's idea of operation, for good or for bad, is to say, we will sell any sort of device to anybody with any money to spend on any side of device. That's why they make essentially 7 different sizes of tablets. They want to make sure that if someone comes in for a 12-inch tablet or for an 8-inch tablet or for a 9.131415-inch tablet, that it's there for sale. It's possible that what consumers are starting to say is that we love the iPad, but all along we wish it were 7.5 inches across instead of 10 inches. All you have to do is come across with a decent tablet, something that works very, very well, if not magically, then that's a problem for Apple, because now Android 4.0 and 4.1, those are excellent mobile operating systems. When you put it on a phone, I do think that it is as good overall an operating system as iOS. for definitely good enough that that doesn't have to be your deciding factor, that GiOS is a better operating system. Yes, but 4.1, 4.0 Android is exceptionally good. It really is well above the bar of what you would want a mobile operating system to be. Now that they're starting to put this on tablets, it's not there's still, I think, a wide gap between the usability of an iPad and the usability of even a Nexus 7, but it's really not as distinct. And if Google continues to make the right decisions a year from now, the fact that there are five different manufacturers who have great agility in building the hardware that consumers want, and Android building an operating system that is perfectly better than adequate, it's actually good, if not great. And there's also a library of software where, just like the differences between iOS and Android, you don't have anywhere near the same depth of catalog. But if you want Evernote, you got Evernote. You want the Kindle app, you got the Kindle app. You want a good art app, you have a good art app. The fact that an app is extremely successful on iOS means that there's money to build an Android version. This is an interesting thing. And over the next year, we're really going to see an answer to that question. What is it about the iPad that people are responding to? And I'll wind up this breathless screed by saying that the other thing we haven't talked about is what Microsoft Surface is going to do about this, how this is going to affect, because this is sort of the same sort of...
Does Microsoft know?
Excuse me?
Does Microsoft know?
No, all I mean is that the Microsoft Surface is going to be a helpful indicator of, do people really, really want something that's very, very tablety and very, very multi... something that is distinctly an iPad-like experience, or do they just like the idea of having something that is more functional like a notebook, but a more of a 21st century notebook instead of a 20th century notebook? So it's just so exciting to see all these questions are sort of coming to fruition, like in the same probably 11 months.
Yeah. I got something to say.
Greeny, please.
It ain't over till the fat Samsungs.
Oh, jeez. Thank you, mate. That's very good.
And he's also a laser
gentleman. Very good.
I have an actual point to make.
Chris's turn. He hasn't said a word all show. Come on, mate.
What I think is particularly interesting about... Because Andy mentioned the Kindle Fire and he mentioned the Nexus 7, and these tablets have sold. But what's especially interesting is the fact that both of these tablets sold at a $199 price point.
Oh, that was my point.
And what's also, there's more to it here, because the Amazon isn't making much money at all on the Kindle Fire hardware itself. They're selling them to make money on selling people ebooks and MP3 downloads and movie rentals and et cetera. All their content of their digital content. Google is selling the Nexus 7 at zero profit. There's zero, and they've come out and said it. There's zero margin on this. And the problem with this is that while that price point is popular with consumers, because hey, if I could get an iPad for $200 instead of $500, I would get one at $200. There's no question. I think everyone would do that. The problem is that business isn't sustainable, because Samsung can't make a tablet for $200 and sell it for $0. They can't keep doing that. And the same thing is happening here with the Windows RT or the ARM Windows 8 or whatever it is going on. There are already rumors that Microsoft is going to sell their device at $200, which would be smart if they want to get market share. It's going to be great. But the problem is all their OEM partners are going to be angry, because now none of them are going to be able to make money, because everyone's just going to buy the $200 Microsoft tablet instead of their $300 or $400 tablet that they're trying to make a profit on. And it's important to recognize that people bought a lot of Kindle Fires, but it was all over the Christmas holidays. After that initial burst, the sales numbers dropped significantly. The same thing with the Nexus 7 is people rushed out to get the initial stock, and now, you know, Google started limiting sales of it because they don't have any, they can't make any more to meet the demand at $200. And they may in fact even lose money on the venture at $200 in order to ramp her production to keep up with demand at $200. So the concern that I have is, at least now, with what the expectations that the iPad has set, there is not, you cannot make a profitable tablet at this $200.
No, I can't say that either. I mean, that's one of the things that, in Andy's point there about the Surface, is I could really see the RT being a piece of crap, and then the Pro, in inverted commas, being almost like a desktop computer, and the price difference being equally different. You know, one's subsidizing the other, and one's an inducement, and the other one's a proper experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see that I mean, there's talk about Windows being at $200 for the RT, for the Surface. I don't see that in a million years.
That's a rumor with a lowercase r and probably a silent oomer. I don't know anybody credible who's saying that it's going to be $200, right?
And Winnie the Pooh. If it's plural, would that be an R's?
Yes. There was originally a estimate from analysts that the Kindle Fire cost about $192, $193 to manufacture. Since then, they've reduced that estimate to about $160 something. So there's still a healthy profit on each unit there. The quote about the cost of the Nexus 7, well, that one comes directly from Asus. So they're saying that essentially we're building them for slightly less than what they're charging for them. So there's definitely heat there. But it's given that Google is, remember that Google is another huge company that doesn't doesn't have to, the reason why the Amazon Kindle, the first one, got to lose so much money for the first couple of years and yet become such a big success was that it was being manufactured by a company that is not in the hardware business. They were making money hand over fist over retail. And so they could just, as I'm fond of saying, Jeff Bezos, he is funding the creation of his own private space fleet. He is someone who's okay with saying, I have a vision for the next 5 years that it's okay if I eat it for the first three or four, because I think the payoff along the line is going to be really, really good. It's certainly in Google's best interest to say that, look, we understand why you made fun of our tablets, like when they're running 2.2. We know why you made fun of our tablets when they're running 3.0, but trust us, Android 4.0 is actually a really, really good operating system. And all we have to do is put a decent piece of hardware in your hands at a competitive price, and we think that everybody will start treating Android more seriously. And for that reason, the Nexus 7 is, by any stretch of the imagination, a huge, huge success. And they do have the ability to, if they do have to eat it for a couple of years and sell only 12 million units a year, that's perfect. I think Google says that's perfectly fine, so long as if 3-4 years down the line they actually have a credible market for Android. So that's, I think they're playing the long game. And in terms of Microsoft Surface, that really could be the dark horse candidate here, because it's embarrassing how poorly Metro-based phones are selling. They're well below even Nokia at this point. Mm-hmm. I think that's like 1.1% market share.
But when Windows, say Metro anymore.
Oh, sorry.
Don't say Metro anymore.
Exactly. Because it's racist. Well, I don't care. We have free speech here in the United States. But
when was Metro racist? Is that why they banned it?
Ewan, the fact that you don't see that as racist really illustrates the problem here.
I'm naive.
I really think we should get off this topic before this becomes something that hits the interwebs.
Ewan Rankin, the racist.
Great. Thank you. I'm glad we've made progress here, Ewan. You've actually admitted it. Yeah. That's good. We can build on this foundation.
Metro.
For the big win of the Surface is that it really is delivering. Here is a fundamental aspect of the desktop operating system, the most popular operating system on the planet, not by a little, but by a huge margin. And if they do it right, and they are able to communicate to users that we are giving you an articulation of Windows 8 that is completely relevant to a $400 tablet computer, so that it's not even a case of your documents are in the cloud and they sync up and you have a different version of this app that will work on two different platforms. But no, we have a version of Office that is the exact same Office that you get to use on your desktop. You just get to choose whether you use this wonderful multi-touch interface, a comfortable and familiar Windows interface, whether you spend $400 for this really sexy tablet or $800 for a more conventional notebook. So that's another data point where people are going to vote saying, We like the iPad, but we would have liked it more if there was less of a real harsh division between this $400, $500 mobile device and my $1,000 desktop computer.
Will, you had your hand up. Was that so you could go to the toilet?
No, it's soaking down.
Oh, was that what it
was? Yeah. I used to have a rubber hand.
Oh, God.
That's why we're keeping quiet. I thought you wanted to speak next, Will. Just to bring it back to the iPad mini or the iPad nano, whatever you want to call it, I think it's not so much to do. It used to be we were discussing the form factor, will Apple make a 7-inch iPad because other 7-inch iPads are out there? But I think it's reversed now. I don't think it's the form factor so much as it's the price point. You know, they've got this big hole in their range down at the bottom end where there's no iPad for less than $399, which is the iPad 2. Now, I'm sure Apple, of all people, can actually make a 7-inch iPad for $299 or $259 and, make a significant profit on that. And if they do, and, they can actually create that device, which is smaller and thinner and lighter than the standard iPad, people are just going to, they'll break all sorts of records selling that sort of device. Mm-hmm. Because, the main barrier to people, that most people who wanted an iPad have probably got one by now, and those people who can see the benefits of the iPad, even if they couldn't, but they could afford it, they would buy one. But there's a whole load of people who it's just too expensive to take a punt on. But, a $299 or a $249 device, which is just like, it's an iPad. It's got all the same features. It's got all the applications. It's from Apple. It's sexy. It's, it's this really cutting edge device. Or you can buy this Android tablet for $199. Well, for an extra $50 or $100, I can get an Apple iPad. They actually sell tons of them. So that's the bit that we need to focus on now. It's the missing price point. It's the iPad that's not there at the moment. They've got the $399, they've got the $499, but they've got nothing at $299 or lower. And I think that's the thing that sells it to me as to why they will actually go.
But it's not just the feasibility, though, is it? It's the desire to make it at that price point as well as. And I'm not sure the desire is there to hit the $249 market.
But why leave money off the table if they can do that?
Well,
there's got to be significant profit in it at that point. And I don't think Apple would have significant profit in it because they'd be talking probably about $190 to $200 in bill costs.
I don't know. So, I mean, the current iPad Touch is was that $199?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not that much bigger than that. And with the scale and with the manufacturing techniques now.
I think if they're pressed, they will reduce the price, even if it becomes a loss leader, because they make their money to the App Store and the iTunes Store, don't they?
Yeah.
In the same way that Amazon are selling theirs to make money out of the books. So
I don't think Apple would ever sell anything that didn't make a profit. It's not in their DNA, right. Is it? They have to make a margin and make significant margin on products that they sell, otherwise they're not interested. So that would be a killer for them if they couldn't. But I'm pretty confident they could actually make a decent margin on a small iPad.
But that was back in the day. That was the Steve Jobs model. I think things have changed.
Mm-hmm. OWC have created the 480 gig SSD replacement for the Retina Display MacBook Pro. It's fine and dandy, and it's small, and you're getting a lot for your money, hopefully. It's $580 for 480 gig. I looked at this, and I haven't checked the price, but my first thought was, well, for the extra money, wouldn't you be better off just getting the Apple one? Because it's not that much more expensive pro rata, and you get the Apple warranties and all that kind of stuff with it rather than looking for an external replacement.
What is it, Ewan?
I think it's faster, isn't it?
OWC's offering a 480 gig SSD to go in to replace the existing Retina display that's in the existing SSD that's in the Retina MacBook Pro. As Don says there, it's a fraction faster, but I didn't think the price gave it that much of a leading edge, to be honest. It seemed a little bit...
Is it like a warranty? So if your whatever's out of warranty and you want to buy a replacement hard disk, you'd buy one of these? I mean,
no, I think it's meant to be like a performance upgrade. And one of the issues with the base model of the Retina MacBook Pro when they first launched it, you couldn't get bigger than 256. So if you bought a Retina MacBook Pro, one of the first ones, you couldn't buy a bigger SSD. So if someone did buy it at that time and they wanted to upgrade, they could do. Whereas now you can actually get the 512 and above as a build to order on the lower spec MacBook Pro. But I don't know. I mean, the good thing is if you want the ultimate in performance, obviously you'd get that. You can also get an enclosure, although they're not available until next year, but they will actually supply you with an enclosure. So you can take the existing SSD out, plug that into the enclosure, and use that as an external drive. But
you're getting excited about this, Don, aren't you? You've looked at it, you're going to do it, aren't you? I can tell.
No. I'm more than happy with the current SSD drive. I wouldn't go for...
The performance actually isn't really any better than the Apple OEM drive. What's interesting here is that the Apple OEM drive, Apple specs it at 512, but once it's all formatted and set up and everything, you're only actually getting about 500 gigabytes. The OWC drives actually use more over provisioning, so that they basically reserve area on the drive, because as it's used, some of the cells in the NAND chips will just stop working. And so what it does is when bad blocks are identified, it takes over and starts using some of these reserved blocks to make up for it. And so it's not really faster, but it is designed to be kind of more fail-safe. But really the value proposition is like we already discussed, is for people who got that entry-level model with a 256 and want or need more space. And for the price seems, you know, it's $580 to get the OWC one. If you go to Apple and configure,
it's $500
with the 512, it's $500.
It's $20,
but you don't get to keep that 256 module. So there's a little bit of value proposition there. So if you upgrade it yourself, you get to keep the extra module. And the external enclosure probably won't ship until a little bit later this year. But people who order before, I think, the end of August, or no, I'm sorry, but if they order before the end of September, OWC is actually going to give you a free enclosure. So it's a pretty good value proposition. It's mainly only going to appeal to people who got that entry level Retina MacBook Pro with the 256 drive.
I think it's, it just struck me as being not worth it, but there we go. Apple have decided that the little bands that go around your phone was missing a red one. I didn't know that they didn't do a red one, and they've decided to do a red one now. And I can't figure out why have they just brought out a red one? They've just brought out a red one.
Well,
we're scraping the barrel now if we've gone down to...
No, I was just interested. I thought, while I've got the oracles of Apple around me, you guys, yeah, the people who know everything, I thought, why wasn't there a red one to start with? And B,
agreed.
Why release just one now when you've got an imminent upgrade to the phone?
Because Browett's a Liverpudlian, that's what it is.
there we go. Red.
It's not just that it's the color red, it's also... a product red, so yeah. A certain percentage of the profits actually goes to the product red charity.
Got you.
And this has happened in the past where they didn't have a red one and then added one later. I think there was like maybe some iPod Nanos that were like this, where they didn't have red to start with, and then they brought out a red one later on. I agree, though. I think it was short-sighted not to have the red one from the very beginning. I would have gotten a red bumper. If there had been a red one, I would have paid to get the red one, 2 years ago. But
never mind.
I agree. Now it does seem a little late, but you also have to keep in mind that Apple has sold millions upon millions of iPhone 4 and iPhone 4Ss. So there's still a market out there for people. You know, obviously they're still selling bumpers, or they wouldn't have even bothered.
Jolly good. Microsoft have said that despite the fact that there's going to be some issues, because apparently there's been some fuzzy text and that kind of stuff with the Retina display, there's no plans to support the Retina display with any of their software, and particularly Office for Mac, which is out there. Is that significant to Apple, or don't they just really care? Because I would have thought Office was one of those packages that Apple probably do want around.
I'm not sure. Did they say that they specifically have no plans to support Retina, or did the quote that I saw was them saying that we traditionally release a new version of Mac Office after we release the new version of Windows Office, and we don't have anything to say about any new features about that at this time.
Ah, okay. Well, I've read that wrong maybe then, but the thing I saw that there was no plans to support was the words that I read. I'm trying to find the story now.
Maybe no announced plans, but unless nobody inside Microsoft uses a Retina MacBook, I'm 100% certain that they're going to have a version that supports Retina displays, because if there's non-Retina apps just looks like crap next to a Retina enabled app on the same screen. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people who says, oh, I borrowed a Retina Mac for a week and now I refuse to go back. I really don't think it's that big of a difference between the 15-inch MacBook Pro and the 15-inch Retina Mac. Better, but not disgustingly better. But but if you have two windows side by side on the Retina screen, I wouldn't say it's unusable, but oh man, you are never not aware
it's
that
irritating.
something's gone horribly wrong with this other app.
Well, never mind. Hey. Apple are going to support cable TV more than they currently do, according to the latest rumours with Apple TV. The TV, is it a TV thing, has kind of disappeared. But there was a study this week that cable TV is winning big in the States. It's taking over a lot of the dishes is losing out to it. And this is a smart move for Apple. And really, with a box that does what this does, are they not set up for it? Is this ideal? Hello? Am I on my own? Hello?
Apple TV.
No, I'm not talking about the TV. What I'm saying is there's a person that they're pursuing the cable TV companies, and there's a report out this week that the cable TV companies are winning hand over fist in market share. So Apple really have got to forget whether the TV is a TV, that the box has got to evolve to encompass and embrace the cable market, surely.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, something that really hit home, like watching the Olympics last week, is that, we complain about the NBC coverage here in the US, but the fact is that there's a box attached to your big 42-inch, 50-inch TV. You press the big red button on the remote that's next to your lap, you would turn it on, and you get TV. You get to watch this and it absolutely works. Whereas as wonderful and advanced thinking as streaming video is, or buying shows like off of the Apple Store is, there's about a million steps before you actually start to see it. And when you're talking about live coverage, a live event like that, I was watching for journalistic purposes, I was testing certain services of the BBC streaming service.
Fire proxy.
Well, I wouldn't say it was. I was perfectly legal because I'm a journalist. But the problem is it works great. And then like maybe just as you're wondering, oh, here's Paul McCartney. I wonder if he'll sing Hey Jude. Like the thing freezes and you're like, oh, okay. And I've got 23 seconds of wondering whether I should close the window and reopen it.
You didn't miss anything. Don't worry.
Did he sing Hey Jude? Like I had money on that he might be singing Hey Jude.
Not really. He kind of did, but kind of didn't. Sing may be the operative word that's wrong there, but never mind.
I'm hoping he's okay.
I mean, there's an interesting point here. There's the chat room saying, yeah, but Apple needs to make sure that the TV is catering for worldwide audiences, not just US. And there's another story this week that LTE, they're having discussions with Korean suppliers for LTE for iPhone 5, the new iPhone. And LTE... They famously left the UK and other countries out of LTE by picking the spectrum that they did. They've got a real issue coming up with the release of the new iPhone, if it really is coming in September, October, that they've got to make it inclusive for the rest of the world, or people are going to look at it and go, what's the point?
Well, I mean,
LTE because it doesn't help me.
They've made one-off iPhones before. Remember that when the Verizon first came into the iPhone, they had to create a brand new piece of hardware just for that carrier. I really think that if they don't get into LTE soon, oh boy, that's a problem, because we can talk kind of entertainingly about how, oh gee, I wonder if the iPad would be vulnerable at some point in the future to these sort of devices. The iPhone is full on vulnerable to Android at this point. The Android hardware is right up there with the iPhone class. The operating system is very, very close to being in that same class. The software also very close to being in that same class. I think that it really comes down to it's close enough that now it comes down to, do you want a larger screen? I want a larger screen. Does iPhone make a phone with a larger screen? No. Okay, then I won't buy an iPhone. We're going to see a lot of people who are saying, does does the iPhone have LTE? Nope. Okay, I'll just buy an Android phone then. So I think this is one place where they would say, it'd be nice if we could roll out an LTE phone to the entire world at once. We don't think that that's possible, but we definitely need to have an LTE iPhone on the books sometime in the next 4 months.
But would they just not use the same techniques as they use for the iPad? I mean, they've rolled out LTE on the iPad, but you know, many of us can't actually use it. So wouldn't they just do the same for the iPhone and those territories where it was compatible, they can use it, and the other territories, it's still got all the other carriers and all the other technologies built into the phone. It's just that, and then perhaps a little bit later down the track, you know, the iPhone 6, goodness, or whatever, you know, when there's some defined standards for other territories, then look at bringing out different versions of the phone or a phone that can cope with multiple versions. But I think for this next iPhone, it can probably just get away with rolling out the same chipset that they use for the iPad or similar, and we'll just say thank you very much, and we'll wait for LTE to appear here in the UK.
Are you still on a 3GS, Greeny?
Yes, I am.
And loving it.
It does the job. Here's an interesting thing. It was my domain, British Mac, is with Google, and my phone, when you get Google for Business, you can sort of do a basic MDM control of mobile devices, including iPhones. To a limited extent. It does really well with Android, but iOS does to a certain extent. Anyway, so I sort of paired it with my Google server, and it ran like a dog. And when I deleted that connection, it worked really well. So I don't know whether it was a software glitch or something like that. But that said, my wife's phone, here's a tip. If you put your phone in a paddling pool for about 25 minutes... It doesn't work anymore. Really? It did work for a bit. I got excited. The next day, I thought, I'll give it a go, plug it into the power, and it was sort of working. It was a bit weird, but it was sort of working.
Oh, you didn't let it dry out inside?
Well, I know I should have done that.
I think we're seeing the effects of urine here. I think that if you'd filled the paddling pool, dropped it in there, then taken it out again, you possibly would have been able to get it work. But after like a bunch of kids in there have been there for about at least 12 minutes, no, that was dead. you wouldn't want to hold that up to your face anyway.
That's really cool, Andy, because normally it's Greenier that brings up urine first, not the reverent few that come on the panels.
I'm a man of science.
I'm impressed, very impressed. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by the by the UK2 people. They're great. They look after us. They've looked after us for 3 years, and they're going to keep all the hosting going, and it's going to be fantastic and gorgeous. They've got another 2 years with it guaranteed. Please support them in return. A lot of you are. Lots of you are buying service from them. If you need anything for the web, VPN, VPS, co-location stuff, anything like that, virtual servers, dedicated servers, go and check out their prices, see what you think. When you open them, go to britishtechnetwork.com and click on their logo, and that will open up in a new tab. On our tab, if you go to sponsors, there's a whole pile of reduction codes that you'll get in there, and you can use all of them. You don't just get one, choose which one you want. You get to put all of them in and see what your basket will come out at. Don't put your payment details in first. Put the code in first, and then keep hitting the code button, and you should get down to a lot less. 20% off domains, and some of the services are free in there as well for the first year. DNS management, gone. British Tech listeners don't pay for that. Please support UK2. Because they support us and they're fantastic. And also, if you'd like to give us donations, then there's a little button on the top that says buy the network a beer. $5 or $10 a month would be great. Thank you very much. All donations go into the network. None of it goes into beer in my pocket. And if we get any donations this week, they're going to go onto an air conditioning unit for this office, because I am hotter than Dawn French's butt crack. It is unbelievable in here. I am.
Do you mean temperature or just sexual allurement? Yeah.
I don't care either. And the other one scares the hell out of me, so we're not doing it. I am hot beyond belief. I look like a fat bloke. Sweating on a hot day. Yes. Right, cool things. Mr. McAllister,
don't forget Gaz's tip.
Ah, of course. My mistake. I have repeatedly these last couple of weeks forgotten Gaz's tip, and I shouldn't, because he's great for making them. Thank you, Gary. Really appreciate them. Please keep them coming in. And also, they're sponsored by the wonderful TechSmith, and he makes it with the wonderful piece of software called Camtasia 2. If you haven't got Camtasia 2, go and have a look. And I think we've got a voucher code coming up for that, so stick around. Here's Gaz's tip.
Hi everyone, Gazmaz here with a quick tip for the audience of the Mac Show, brought to you from the British Tech Network. This tip also comes with the help of Camtasia from TechSmith. Okay, so this is a quick tip for all you Line users. Now, I don't know about you, but I often find myself opening an application and then clicking on Open Recent to open a document that I perhaps was working on recently. Well, if you keep your most used apps on the dock, there's an easy way to access those recent documents and files and open the application by opening those documents and files that you're looking for most recently. Right, here's how. If you hold down Control and left click on the particular application that you're looking for, you can see that a submenu comes up. Now, you'll also notice that I've released the Control key, and I can either use my arrow keys, or I can use the mouse cursor and move the cursor to the particular document that I'm looking for. Now, this submenu has a few other options, but let me first open a recent document. Now, it also actually opened a previous document that was open, and that's that foible of Lion, which I sometimes like and sometimes don't. It's embarrassing me at the moment. Anyway, there we go. Well, let's move on. Now, there is another way to get to this submenu, and that is to left click and hold on the application, and as you can see, that submenu appears again, or you can actually right click and again the submenu comes up. Now, you can see that the blue document which is open is actually divided from the most recent ones, because obviously these particular documents are not open yet, but it's seeing that one as open and it's giving me a check mark next to it. Okay, so the submenu has a couple of other options, one of which is Show Recents. Now, I don't find this option quite so useful. In fact, let me get back to showing you the Show Recents. If I click and hold, there is the Show Recents. And let me click on that and show you what I get. As you can see, I've got a list of the recent documents at the bottom. Now, it does give you the name of the document, and you can partially see it. But I don't quite find that as useful as actually seeing the list of documents here. However, that Show Recents does change once you've got a few documents already open. So let me open the orange document, and let me open the yellow document, and let me open, let's say, the red document. Okay, so how does it change? Well, it now changes, if I press Control and click, to Show All Windows. And if you click on this option, you'll now see that you get the most recent options at the bottom, the most recent documents at the bottom, but you'll also get those most recent documents which are also open. And from here, obviously, you can easily pick the document that you want to choose. Now, that's all well and good. However, I'm not quite sure that this is as useful once you actually put one of the documents and minimize it down to the dock. Because now, if I click, it'll now show me Show All Documents. And you can see here the yellow document, which is in the background, the red document, which is the one that's got the focus in the foreground, and the orange document, which has got the diamond next to it, which shows that it's actually in the menu bar. Not in the menu bar, it's actually on the dock, and it's minimized. Now, if you go Show All Documents, the orange one is still obviously the most recent next to the two that are open. But actually, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, I'd prefer to actually see that up here as a large document, because it's actually only minimized and I'm still wanting to get to it quickly. Perhaps that's just me. But as to getting to those recent documents and files, I love this little shortcut. So remember, Control and click, or click and hold, or right click, and you can get to your most recent documents or the documents you've already got open. That's all I have for you this week. As usual, have a great Mac week.
There you go, another enlightening tip from Gary.
He still didn't say anything.
He still didn't say anything, no, did he? I'll sort this out, Will, don't worry. I'll send you a video of how we do this. I know it amazes you, mate, but honest, it's fine. So I need to go back to before we did cool things. So cool things. Don, have you got a cool thing for us, mate?
Yeah, go on then. This is weird, this one. It's not an application. It's a service. Big hoo-ha at the moment is about Twitter and the new API that's just come out. Lots of developers up in arms. But at the same time, well, for the past few weeks, there's been a service called app.net, which has been gathering steam and gathering contributors to sort of build. It's sort of like an alternative to Twitter. And they actually reached their goals of funding. I think it was that they wanted $500,000 to get funding to launch this app.net service. And they've exceeded it. They got $600,000. So if you want to and are that way inclined, you can contribute to support this new initiative. If you go over to join.app.net, you can sign up for an account. Now, at the moment, it's $50 to join because they're trying to get the funding together. But it's really interesting. It's there's a new alpha service just out, and it's very weird. You can sign up to it, you can log on. It's a bit like Twitter, but it's sort of growing and changing sort of on a day-by-day basis. There's a ton of developers in there. They're all developing all different applications and different clients for this new Twitter-like service. And if you're interested in development or if you're interested in seeing something grow and morph into something that could be quite useful, app.net is now online, and it's very interesting.
The only thing that bothers me about this is that I watched all the tweets this morning of people really ripping into Twitter about being control freaks and stopping third-party apps and all that kind of stuff. And then I thought, hang on, you've gone to somewhere, you've given them $50 of your money, and they said they'll give you the beta when they've got enough. You've just handed $50 over to Highwayman, effectively.
Not really. I mean, they haven't taken any money as yet, to be fair.
But they're dashing you in.
But they haven't taken any money yet, but they. It's really interesting. It's a new framework that they're building, and the idea is that it's supposed to be, you're not going to be, you know, with Twitter, because it's free, they're going to give you promoted tweets and they sell on the information, etc. Whereas this is meant to be the other way around, and you can get in, you can pull all your information off if you ever want to, and then they're never going to sort of sell your details on. It's sort of like more of an open system. Whether it takes off completely or not, I'm not too sure, but it's quite interesting if you're that way inclined, just to see it grow, really, from its initial thoughts. Do you actually turned into something solid now.
It's really interesting because it's not so much that if you sign up right now and you get your account, you will see a client, a web client that looks very much like Twitter, but you shouldn't start thinking that the whole point is to create a replacement for Twitter. The idea is to have an infrastructure for the social graph, of which this Twitter is just sort of the first demonstration, and just here's a way we can articulate what we're going for in a way you can understand it right now. But in the future, anytime that you need to share links, share quips of information, share photos in a social metaphor, this is the carrier that's going to be used in order to make that happen. The idea being that you will have full control of what happens there. You'll have full control of what happens into the stream. More than anything else, anything that's supported by advertising on an abstract level, at least, exist to serve advertisers instead of users. So at least the stated premise of app.net is that this will always be there to serve the interests users first and nobody else. Exactly right. Right. I felt as though it was worth my putting $50 just to see. I'd like to see what happens to this after about a year. Also, what really was the last straw for me was when Twitter did change their APIs, which I don't think is a universally bad thing, but it does indicate that when you put so much of your trust and so much of what you so much for your trust into this one service, they do have the ability to change the terms under which they provide that service to you. So instead of being we're only in the business of forwarding on 140 characters of whatever to whomever via whatever means that anybody wants to support it with, now it becomes, we are Twitter. We are going to define what Twitter is. You cannot do anything that's outside of the bounds of what Twitter is. I don't think that's a bad thing, but in 2 years' time, that might be turned Twitter into a service that is not as good as what I enjoy right now. So it's interesting. It's supporting an idea as opposed to buying a service right now.
I'm with you on that one, Ewan, though.
That wasn't meant to be a news story. It was just... Sorry.
No, what we'll do, we'll think of a good idea. Right?
I've had 5+ years of Twitter for nothing. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
Yeah, if we think of a good idea, which we think will make us some money, and we do a few nice Photoshops, whack it up on the old money gathering websites.
Oh, Kickstarter, yeah.
Yeah.
You know that's illegal, right? It's fraud.
And then just keep the money.
And the fact that we've made a podcast about doing it now, it really doesn't help the case, does it? I mean,
I was only backing on what you said.
Thanks, mate.
Hang on.
When did I become the ringleader of this?
At the start.
Step up.
Let's scam a load of people.
I never said that at all.
I'm just a hitchhiker, officer. I know nothing about the bodies in the trunk.
This was Greeny's idea. Andy, what have you got for us, mate?
How many people here are using Waze for his GPS navigation? W-A-Z-E.
No one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Does it only do the U.S.?
it is worldwide. What it is, it's crowdsourced navigation that sucked about a year and a half, 2 years ago when I first tried it. And then somebody like sort of urged me, so we should check it out again because 3.0 really kicks butt. So I tried it about a month ago and it instantly displaced every other GPS app I've used for navigation. Does
crowdsourced navigation mean you ask somebody directions?
Actually, in a way you are. Because they signed up their 20 millionth user about a month ago, which means that probably in any given area, there are about 1,000 people around you who also have Waze installed on their iPhones and their Android phones and their other mobile devices. And so you are getting live traffic information about what's happening at every stretch of road. So, yes, there is you are supposedly anonymously providing this information so that if you're on the highway, it knows that, oh, geez, for some reason, the speed limit here is 60 miles an hour, but this guy is only doing 32. So either his car is just broken down or there's traffic here. Next time someone asks the service to provide a route from A to B, I'm going to try to get them to avoid this place. But the other cool thing is that you can also manually, if you're absolutely stuck in traffic, you can actually tap a button to actually file a report saying, warning, there's traffic at this point that's complete standstill. There's also ways to say there's a cop right here, or there's a car pulled over by the side of the road, broken down. There's an animal in the middle of the road. And this information is exceptionally good. I got this. It's in my mind right now because yesterday there was grew up in the Boston area, which is where bad traffic was pretty much invented in the United States of America. Like all the great ideas, this was like the Skunk Works factory. This is like Xerox Park for new ways of screwing up people in cars. Worst traffic I can remember in the past 20 years, because a truck hit some sort of a light pole, pulled like high power lines down across both lanes, northbound and southbound of Interstate 95, which is the main road that gets you from anywhere to anywhere between any two towns in New England. Not only that, but it also had like a knock-on effect where it also shut down I-295, which is the road you use when I-95 is shut down for any reason. So this was the ultimate test of Waze, in that I needed to go someplace that was on the other side of this traffic snarl, and Waze just kept trying to update itself, saying, okay, wait, sorry, this road has just been closed down too. I'm going to send you on this back road. Oh, okay, wait a minute. The Department of Transportation is using that as a detour, and traffic is down to 8 miles an hour. I'm going to set you down on this road instead. So it really does a heroic job of trying to responding to things that are only 5 minutes old and trying to find solutions. And the other thing that's really great about it is that it really is crowdsourced and crowd influenced. Like there's so many times when I first moved to this house, there was a brand new highway, brand new exit that had been built but didn't appear on any maps yet. And so it took 8 months before the GPS and my phone would actually tell me to take the actual shortest route from my house to anywhere, because it did not know that this place existed. With Waze, you actually have the ability to go into the web and say, like, well, yesterday it did send me down a lot of back roads that were kind of like it really just not well traveled. At least once it believed that a certain road was a through road that would get me from A to B, not knowing that there was actually Jersey barriers across it and a no trespassing sign, because it was actually across private property. So what you're able to do is simply touch a button that says report a map problem right there. It will actually drop a GPS marker that simply flags it. Oh, there's a problem here. A user had a problem. You can actually type in exactly what's wrong, or maybe you don't want to crash, so you just tap the button. When you get back to your office, your home, you can actually pull up Waze.com, pull up the map editor, and then actually specify what the problem is, modify the map to say there is no way to get from here to here, and that change is almost instantly applied. Or, as is the case, when I got home, somebody in the area who apparently their hobby is to keep the map up to date, they noticed that, gee, there is a warning about some map issue in my actual geographical area. I'll check that out. Oh, wait, he is absolutely right. There's no way to get across this road, and the map had already been edited to affect that change. So it's incredibly useful. It's also the last thing I'll say, just to sort of underscore how accurate it is. Every time that I plot a course, and usually I'm not using it to find a destination that I've never been to before. I've got my usual like 45 mile commute to like an office that I regularly visit. So I really just want to know, is this the day that I need to take that different road, or can I go through my usual route? It is always spot on accurate to the minute, but predicting that if it tells me that it's going to take 43 minutes to get there, almost always it's absolutely accurate within the minute, because it knows what the traffic situation is and it knows how well I'm going to be doing there. And the best thing is, it's a free app. You can just download it from the App Store, waze.com. Waze. Works great. Like it a lot.
I would be downloading it if I had an iPhone at the moment, but I don't. It's on a tray in the lounge in pieces. Thanks, Ellis. By the way, as well, notifying people of the presence of the police when they've got a speed trap set up is a criminal offence here in the UK. So,
God bless America. Well, see, over here, I don't know why the police have speed traps in the UK. In the United States, it's just there to ensure the safety of the drivers, to remind them to slow down and observe posted speed limits. So the cops are absolutely thrilled that people are telling them, broadcasting where the speed traps are, or where the speed cameras are, because it gets people to slow down in that one half a mile area before they speed up again.
Yes. Mr. Forsman, what do you have for us, mate?
I have something interesting here. Let me grab it. We were talking about this actually on the photo show a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
The Ion iPix to go.
Right.
You see this here? Can you see this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That was really good.
Yeah, it's a little. It's basically a little black plastic box. Okay. In the top here, you can see a slot to put your iPhone, a little hole. That's right where your camera is. And I'm going to turn this on. Hopefully, you'll see the light inside.
Yeah.
Can you see that? Mm-hmm. No, maybe not. Maybe you can see it down here.
Right. Yeah, we see
the light inside. Yeah, yeah. Okay. There's a tray, and this does 4x6 prints or 3.5 or 3.5x5 prints. What's that? 10x15 in the UK?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, there's also an optional film holder, and you can pop in a negative strip, or even a slide will fit right in here in this tray. Snap down, pop it in there, okay? Put your iPhone on top, and then you can basically snap pictures of negatives or slides or prints and have them right on your iPhone. So, yeah, you can kind of see how that fits in there. There's an app. A free app that goes along with it, and it so what it does is you just tell it what size print, or whether you're shooting a negative or slide, and it'll you know, reverse the colors from negatives, and it'll just, and you can go in and even, you know, with a tap, you can tap different areas of the picture to kind of basically adjust the brightness. You snap the picture, it gives you some brightness and contrast and color balance adjustments, then you've got old pictures on your iPhone, and you can put them into Instagram. You can post them to Facebook, cool. Whatever you normally do with your mobile pictures. You can do them with your old family photos, or like I was doing earlier this week, I was posting dozens of pictures from school dances and old embarrassing high school photos.
We saw those.
Yeah.
Good man.
It's really been a lot of fun for me, because I find my past to be quite humorous, but a lot of my friends, you know, were in these pictures or didn't remember these things that happened, and they were really excited to see them. So it's a lot of fun. You know, it's a little pricey for a plastic box with some LEDs in it, but it's really simple to use. It works just as advertised.
Thank you. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. What's the pricing on it?
$59.99.
Excellent. Cheers.
Yeah.
Mr. Green, what do you have for us?
Well, it's not so much... if you've got Mountain Lion, it's at Cunning Tip.
Oh.
So, I've been a big fan of stickers since sort of day one. So we've got that retro part. And the other thing is, do you remember the sort of original idea about a desktop? And that's sort of gone away, really. We still call it the desktop. But it's not really the desktop, is it? It's just a place you put icons or links to files, really. But it's not in the old sort of metaphor of a desktop. So with the new Notes application, did you know if you double-click on a note, I hope you listen to this, Don.
I am.
If you double-click on a note, it opens up in a new window, totally on its own. And what you can do then is if Notes is in full screen, you can drag that note across to your desktop. And it really is like going back in time where you're working on a piece of paper on your desktop. It works really well. And so if your notes thing is in full screen, everything you type and do on that note, it is automatically saved to your notes application in full screen, almost like a file in cabinet. It's good, isn't it?
Very good, mate. Thank you.
Yeah. Seriously, Don, honestly, I've been watching your screencasts and you keep missing stuff like this. And it upsets me, to be honest.
What do you mean the one today, you mean? The one that covered notes?
Oh, I haven't watched that one yet. No.
Oh, Grady.
No, I haven't watched that one, no. No, 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 no. Haven't seen it. Rubbish.
Sure. I believe you.
Okay.
Now, if you're wondering where Dr. Happy Mac is, don't worry, he'll be back next week. It won't be an issue.
Where is Dr. Happy Mac?
Well, he's there, apparently.
Can you not?
Hello, Mr. Tumble. You've been quiet today, mate.
Yeah.
You had a lot of work on, have you? Have you got a cool thing for us, mate? We're at that point in the show.
I know. I've been sat here listening to Andy and everyone.
We know.
I know. I do. Yes. How are you getting on with your accounting?
I haven't done anything with it yet. I've only signed up for it.
Right. I should have done I keep reminding you, I'm supposed to get money off if I tell people this. You know, you get like a referral thing. So I wonder how much you get off your monthly bill thing for pimping it out on to 20,000 listeners.
Stop spinning out the time, dude. Have you got a cool thing or not?
Yes.
Go on. We're already at an hour and a half for the show.
I'm supposed to be a client already. Yes, NASA, them big spenders of American taxpayer money. This is more sort of like a suite of things, really, because we've had a look at, they do the astronomy picture of the day, but they've also got a whole suite of apps, and the best, they've got NASA app HD for your iPad and NASA app for your iPhone. But if you've got an iPad, then go for the iPad HD one, because it's a kind of a one-stop shop link to all the fantastic piles and piles of NASA content and video, etc. So if you want to see Curiosity videos from Mars, you want to see shuttle launches, you want to see countdowns to whatever they've got going off the launch pad at any one time, it's all in kind of one place, and they've got absolutely enormous libraries. It's really, you know, it's free because it's US taxpayer funded. Thank you, Mr. Anarcho. Thank you, Mr. Forsman. You're at work there for us in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Now I don't feel guilty about stealing the BBC feed, not paying my license fee.
No. Quo. So if we can all pile into NASA here and just make full use of it. NASA's always awesome. It's always good for a look because everything they do is fantastic. And it's all there in one place. The only slight problem is that because they've got so much video, they don't always convert it to the right format. So you do get the occasional glitch on the iPad app for video pinging up saying, you don't appear to have Flash installed, which for an iPad app is fairly moronic. But
Not other good.
Than that, I mean, you can forgive the odd bit of content because they do have buckets of it and it's all fantastic. NASA HD iPad app.
Okay. Did you say free?
It's free.
Thanks to the US taxpayer.
Yeah. Everything that's
you're welcome.
My cool thing is a YouTube account called That Snazzy iPhone Guy. As some of you may know, I'll show you the video next week. The problem is I can't get the video off the phone because the phone's knackered. Ellis ran into my phone, basically knocked it flying out of my hands, and it smashed on the floor. I've ordered a front and a back. The front came, but I thought I'd ordered a digitizer and I hadn't. I'd only ordered a screen, and of course I can't get the digitizer off the old screen without smashing it. And I went and got a tutorial, and this guy's tutorial was brilliant. If you've got anything that you need to do with iPhone, iPad, that kind of stuff, go and see him and look at his videos. They're excellent. They're all sponsored. You've got to watch it loud at the start. But it's really simple, really well done, really well shot on video. And at the pace that he does them at, it's kind of good for where you're going with doing it. A lot of the stuff is at the right kind of pace that you would be reacting to it. So it's well thought out videos. So there you go. That's Snazzy iPhone Guy on YouTube. Well done, matey. I'll send you a letter of thanks in a bit. Right. Where can we get a hold of you? Mr. McAllister.
Right, well, you can find me over at screencastonline.com for my weekly video tutorials on the Mac and iOS. You can find my Screencast Online monthly magazine in newsstand, and you can find me on Twitter as Don McAllister and on app.net as Don McAllister as well.
Well worth a subscribe as well. Mr. Anatko, where are you, sir?
If you spell my last name, just go to Anatko on Twitter. You'll find usually a volume of Insignifica. You can also go to anatko.com for my blog and links to other places where I post. And if you're in the United States or if you're in the UK and don't want to support the newspaper industry, you can go to suntimes.com where I normally have about two columns a week.
And you'll be over in November and we'll all have dinner together.
I will be over hopefully by the end of the year again. We have to negotiate with American Airlines to actually have them uphold the deal they made with me when I agreed to keep flying with them over the past 2 or 3 years.
We shall book a table at Bodine's for 200 and we shall have ribs. Mm-hmm.
Also, I understand that I need to give 2 months notice before I get my 6-episode BBC series. So I think we can get in right under the wire, but hopefully we'll figure it out.
You'll be fine. Mr. Forsman, where are you, sir?
I'm at arstechnica.com. You can read all my busy writing I'm always doing there, or you can find me on Twitter at Forsmac. And I would just like to add a minor correction to my cool thing. The iPix2Go is only $39.99, not $59.99.
Very good. Still good price, so though.
Much better value. Excellent. Much better value.
Greeny, where are you, sir?
So BritishMac.com is my podcast. There's a new one coming out this weekend. It's been a while. That's good. And also, I should say thank you to Stoneburn.com for allowing me to come on here. And they're paying for my time. And also, one last thing.
Go on, mate.
Is last year's Pipe Smoker of the Year was Tom Merritt.
Tom Merritt, right? It was. Is that a year ago already?
Yeah. So, well, now it's about time. I'm looking for nominations for this year's Pipe Smoker of the Year. It doesn't really matter if you smoke a pipe or not. That's not really the point. It's just for sort of... I'm not going to say...
It doesn't matter if you smoke a pipe or not for Pipe Smoker of the Year.
Yeah, well, you can put bubbles in it or anything you want, really. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's just good point. For sort of wacky characters, mainly from the IT world, I think that that deserve Pipe Smoker of the Year. So nominations will be open this weekend if you head over to pipesmokeroftheyear.com.
I can think of a couple in that case.
Brilliant.
And my Twitter is... Oh, Dr. Happy Mac, sorry.
Yes. Actually, this week you can find it's that time again for Otter Fondler of the Year. It doesn't actually matter if you're an Otter Fondler.
I'd just like to point out that in the UK, Otter Fondling is a criminal offence.
Yes, that's why you don't have to actually be actively practising Otter Fondling to be registered or to be nominated for Otter Fondler of the
Year. Is it okay in America then?
Yeah.
Some states, maybe not.
In America, an otter is a sort of like a small... sort of like a small plastic duck that you put on the mantelpiece to scare burglars away.
Don't they make hats out of it? What's that bloke called? The one with the hat on.
We're an hour and a half for a show. He says absolutely sod all throughout the entire show. And then all he's got to do is say, at Dr. Happy Mac on Twitter. Okay. Thank you. Jesus.
What's the bloke called? Go on, it'll annoy me now.
Who gives a toss what the bloke's called?
Daniel Boone.
You had your chance in the show.
Daniel Boone, and it's a coonskin hat. It's not an otter hat. Oh my God, it's so funny.
I really don't want to be any hotter than I already am. Look at me. I'm going to go after this show and have a shower so I can be drier. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. And there'll be less of me here next week.
Crockett. Something Crockett.
Davy Crockett.
Davy Crockett.
Davy Crockett. He used to wear a badger on his head. I've seen the pictures and everything. These Americans, you got to watch them. Badger artists, they don't care. Kill them, stick them on the red.
What it fascinates me to see like exactly how other countries think. It's like an American saying, "Oh, but geez, I understand you have to leave the podcast because you have to sweep a chimney and you're dancing down the sidewalk." Yes, in America we are mostly Daniel Boone and skin caps, and
you can't say.
Oh, no,
I'm gonna have to bleep that.
What?
Oh man, see you next week.
That's
Oh.